Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok. It's the Capital Connection with my favorite person, and I mean that, in state government, Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, who is really a gutsy, heroic person. And Tom, it's a pleasure to talk to somebody like yourself because you know what you're doing and you got courage. And thank you so much for being with us.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. And in this crazy environment, it means a lot to have your continued confidence. Thank you, Alan.
And you do indeed. Okay. So, I thought of you yesterday as the market went up 300 points after the speech by Donald Trump. What's going on with the markets, and is that good news for New York State?
Well, in the short run, it certainly is good news. We'll see how long the so-called Trump bump or Trump rally lasts. Obviously, from the perspective of the pension fund, looking at it as the trustee, we value the fund on March 31st. So if this rally holds up through the end of March, we're already on track to post a very good return this year, and that could certainly make that not only likely, but a definite. So you know, we'll see. It also means because when profits are up, the revenue from Wall Street, the tax revenue from business taxes, as well as taxes on income of those working on Wall Street, should benefit the city and the state as well. You know, tax collections have been coming in lower than anticipated for much of this fiscal year. Again, the fiscal year ends March 31st as well. So we could see a bump up in tax revenue because of the profits being made on Wall Street, particularly with income tax collections, in this last quarter of the fiscal year, which is the first quarter of the calendar year. So I hate to say it, I almost feel guilty saying it, Alan, but you know, the market's reaction to the Trump presidency so far, it probably means some good news from a New York revenue perspective and from a pension fund perspective.
So how do you get the money, physically get the money? So in other words, many of us have money in Tia Craft, other things, and we don't take it out unless we have to because we're old. And I wonder how people who are playing the market are forced to give you what they're supposed to give you.
Well, you know, in terms of revenue that comes to the state, I mean, it's tax collection. So there are taxes on the profits of the Wall Street firms. So when they're making more money, you know, the taxes are higher. When those who are on the street get bonuses, those that are at the level where they get a bonus, that will show up in income tax collections. So that's how the state gets the money. From the point of view of the pension fund, when, certainly we think of the global financial crisis and the amount of money that was lost in terms of value, we've made much of that back. But, you know, last year we had a positive return. It wasn't a real strong return. Our long-term goal is 7%. We're probably on track to meet or exceed that goal. So what that's going to mean for our public retirees and public workers who hope to be retirees is that New York will continue to strengthen as being a well-funded pension plan. So that provides retirement security for our public workers and for taxpayers. It means that we will hopefully be able to at least keep rates stable or reduce the rate we charge to our government employers. And that means people may have to pay less in taxes down the road because the pension fund is meeting its mark as far as what we have to generate in return. So, yeah, but look, this is today, Alan. As we know, this is the market increase has been going on for a long time. This unexpected bump, you know, since Election Day certainly came as a big surprise. Election night, the futures were down 700-800 points. The reverse has happened. It's about psychology as much as it's about anything else. You know, I don't want to say, you know, fasten your seatbelts. This isn't going to last and it's going to go the other way at some point. But there are many smart people who would suggest this is not sustainable. There will be a correction, hopefully not any kind of a collapse. But what we're feeling right now may really just be a temporary psychological boost because of some of what the president's proposing as far as the business environment. But that may not last. You know, we may be talking 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now about, you know, what happened to that rally. But we just don't know. And that's the challenge with the markets. It is as much about psychology as much as it is about hard economic facts. And that's why we do as much as we can to not have all of our dollars invested in the public markets. By definition, we have to have a lot of it there. But that's why fixed income and the alternatives are important counterbalances to the volatility that's in the markets.
I want to ask you a question. You know, it's not a question you're going to want to be presented with, but I truly believe that our governor in New York, Andrew Cuomo, has been less than kind. I mean, you've been a remarkable public servant. He tends to get into fights with his controller, with his with his attorney general, with anybody who isn't him. And one of the things he did was to remarkably, and I've talked to you about this before, take away certain powers you had to audit the state's relationship with some not-for-profits. And he got caught quite badly because two of his closest allies, maybe three of them, are on trial basically for their lives right now for having done some pretty terrible things, one of whom has pleaded guilty. Instead of giving you back the powers, which might have given us an avoidance of this, he's chosen to give former controller powers to people in his own administration. Now, I personally think that's disgusting. What do you think?
Well, look, you know, it's all about accountability and transparency, something that I think everyone acknowledges we need more of in state government today, not less of. And you're right. Over the years, particularly going back to the start administration, the governor proposed and frankly, the legislature went along with diminishing our ability to have oversight on certain contracts where we could have a review beforehand. Right. It's one thing to audit something after the fact, but, you know, sometimes you find something that a problem could be avoided if you have that pre-audit authority. So with some of the SUNY contracts on construction, with these big centralized contracts that are now done through OGS, you know, our role was diminished. And one of the concerns I have, you know, even putting aside the question of restoring what was taken away, even in the current budget proposal, there are some further limitations that are would constrict our ability to review on the design build proposal. There's also a piece on debt issuance where our traditional role to provide some level of scrutiny would again be curtailed. And so that, you know, that pattern continues. I think as a minimum, we should have our powers restored. Some have suggested, and I certainly don't think it's a bad idea, expanded in some cases. I think the lesson of what happened with some of those economic development monies, worthy purpose, perhaps, that's a separate debate. But, you know, certainly when you use these entities, these non-profits that really are totally opaque, you know, and you just are transferring state money along this trail where there's really no scrutiny, that's caused some of these problems. So, you know, from my point of view, you should eliminate using the nonprofits as the vehicle to disperse this economic development money. Put the spending on the books, get back to traditional approvals. You know, the argument, Alan, the other way is, well, it takes too long. Well, you know what? Maybe a little extra time making sure you get it right is better than after the fact having to clean up a mess. And in this case, you know, I think that's what we're going through. And it really hurts the credibility, you know, of the program. So, you know, I know that there are proposals, legislatures considering what we've put forward. Some of the legislators have introduced their own proposals. I hope as part of the budget discussion, or if not, part of this session's discussion will be what are the appropriate procurement reforms, and an important piece of that has to be to understand the reason the controller's office was set up was to be independent, to provide another level of scrutiny and review, and that's to protect the taxpayer interest. That's what we're set up to do, and diminishing that role in the long run is a step backwards that I think we're learning the hard way in recent months that there's a price to pay for that, and we should reverse it. Get back to accountability, transparency as cornerstones, understand the controller's unique role to help provide that in New York State.
Well, considering the fact that you've done so well as controller, there is a sense that Andrew Cuomo may want to run for president of the United States in 2020. He has to run for he has to run for governor again. Number one, do you plan to run for controller another time?
I do indeed. 2018, which seems so far away, Alan, now is only around the corner. So fortunately, the Lord has given me pretty good health, and I still love doing the job. So certainly my plan is to run for re-election as controller.
So that, of course, leads to the sucker punch question, which is because Andrew Cuomo has not been kind to you, I think disgracefully so, maybe you should run in a primary against him.
Well, you know, I said many times, including on your show, you know, the secret is that I have the best job in state government, and my goal is to continue to do the job of controller. So that's what my focus is, and I have no plans to do anything other than that.
Well, that's what they always say. You know, I have no plans until they have a plan. What would you say to the girl? What would the girl say to the guy? You know, I'll go to the prom with you unless they were asked. You know what I mean?
So well, that's my line. I'm sticking to it, Alan.
No, I hear you. Okay, so I guess I want to talk to you now about the way you invest for the pension fund. You're the sole trustee. We have a president who's basically going to rape the environment. I'm sorry for using those terms, but it happens to be true. And now he wants to basically cut the budget hugely, things like brownfields and other things out the window. But you, as controller, could decide where you invest. Does that kind of philosophical issue of where to invest come into play when you are making decisions about where you ought to put the state's money, billions?
It's a good question and a very important question. You know, as a fiduciary, my first responsibility is getting a return. And certainly protecting that retirement security for our public workers is key. So bottom line is getting results. And we have a very careful due diligence process. I have investment professionals on staff. We retain consultants. We have advisory committees. And then, of course, we have partners who we invest our money with. So we want a return. But we increasingly, and I think effectively, have been taking the approach that especially as a pension fund, right? We're a perpetual investor. We've been around for over 90 years. We're going to be around, you know, forever. We have a long-term horizon. So the issue of an investment being sustainable, long-term profitability, again, getting away from that notion of short-term, you know, high risk, high reward that got us into trouble the last go-around, pension funds are particularly suited to saying, you know, we're patient capital, we want to have sustainable investments. To me, sustainable investing includes very careful consideration of that other part of the bottom line, not only making money, but what are the consequences of investing from an environmental, social, governance point of view? ESG is the acronym, you know, that's used out there. So we've really incorporated into our investment philosophy, and this is an evolving process. I'm not saying we're 100% where I want to be with the strategy, but we want to know that when we're investing, that the investment partners we're working with take into consideration what the environmental, social, and governance impacts will be. We want to know, I'll use a simple example, Alan, if we're invested in a public company, right? We have a stock and a corporation, sure, from our point of view is not behaving, you know, we're going to hold that corporation accountable. A lot of our money, because efficient way to invest, like many of your listeners, you know, we're passive investors. We're in index funds, which is, you know, exposure to broad parts of the market. So climate change, big issue. You know, in spite of the changes in Washington, we think that is a key issue, and any business should be incorporating that into their business plan, reducing their carbon footprint, being part of the solution, particularly for energy and gas companies. What are you doing to adjust to the reality? Whatever's happening in Washington, Alan, the rest of the world after Paris is moving in a direction to reduce the carbon footprint, to reduce greenhouse gas. So we have just refiled our resolution with ExxonMobil, who we're invested in, largely through our index fund, saying you have not adequately answered the question, how are you as a business going to adjust to the emerging low-carbon economy and be part of the solution, not part of the problem? So we filed that resolution last year. Church of England was our major co-sponsor. We got 38% positive vote, which was amazing for a first-time resolution with a big oil company like Exxon. we're hoping to get an even better vote, if not get a majority this year. So we're going to keep pressing. So, Alan, the answer is we do try to, balancing the need for a strong return and making money for the fund to protect those pensions, making sure that our money capital is being put to good use on environmental issues, on worker issues, on LGBT discrimination issues. You go down the long list of issues that we focus on.
So Rex Tillerson is the new Secretary of State. You talked about ExxonMobil. Obviously, there will be people who are trying to please him. That might mean that ExxonMobil Mobil grows even stronger. He was the chief executive. He's resigned, but nobody of right mind believes he's not still involved with them. So do you take the political considerations into account?
Well, I guess less so. We try to take in all considerations. I mean, the challenge with a big, company like ExxonMobil, which is such a dominant player and strong player in the energy field, when you do an index fund, you're always going to have a piece devoted to energy. So you are going to end up, no doubt, with an ExxonMobil. What we're trying to do, though, with another innovation that we've set up, we've set up a parallel index fund to the traditional index funds we have, where we incentivize companies that are taking into consideration climate risk and reducing their carbon footprint. So what we're going to try to do there is, if companies don't respond to our call to incorporate the climate change question into their decisions, we will in effect put less money towards them and more money towards companies that are doing the right thing by the environment. So might that ultimately have an impact on how we allocate money, for various companies in the energy sector? It has already to a certain extent, and it probably will continue to do that. So in that sense, we're watching what's happening, but again, we're focused obviously on the bottom line and on corporate responsibility more than the politics of the moment.
Okay, let me ask you very quickly, the idea that the president of the United States might be challenged in the next election by a governor may make him mad at New York State. There's things like Medicare money and Medicaid money. How dangerous is that for New York's budget? You have to oversee the whole budget process. Do you think we could be really behind the eight ball here?
There's a lot of vulnerability. We estimated that if you totally repeal the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare, we could be out some $5.7 billion. Now, if they replace it may not be as high as that. There's still a lot of uncertainty. What if they block grant, Medicaid dollars? Those health care dollars are a big part of the money that comes to the state. The impact already on some of the immigration, executive orders and policies. It seems to have a chilling effect on tourism. New York City, a big part of the revenue from tourism is overseas tourists that are coming. New York City and company just put out a report saying they're already seeing a decrease in the foreign tourism market. And generally speaking, those who come from overseas, they spend even more than domestic tourists. So even though tourism may be going up, the foreign tourism market seems to be very much in jeopardy. People overseas part of it may be the strong dollar, but another part is concern about these policies. That's going to hurt, the New York City tourism hospitality economy. That's going to help all of us as well, hurt all of us as well. So I think that there are many vulnerabilities. I don't know that so much they're directed at New York, but just this ideology. Look, when they talk about block granting, right, for Medicaid, they're really talking about trying to reduce costs. And a state like New York, sure, that leverages a lot of health care dollars through Medicaid, we're going to suffer from that. So, I mean, look, Trump is still a New Yorker. I'm hoping he's not going to target New York, but his policies, by extension, have the potential to really hurt us at a time that, as we said, the economy is strong but has been slowing down. Job creation isn't as strong as it had been. There are real concerns about what the implications of these federal changes will be. And right now, Alan, it's a lot of uncertainty. What do they mean when they say replace Obamacare? With what? We don't know. And it may not be for another year or two before we know how bad or what the exact impact will be.
Obviously, you served in the legislature, Tom DiNapoli, and I'm wondering about ethics. These guys just don't want to do ethics reform. Let's face it. Why should they? They have the incumbent protection plan. So is there any way that New Yorkers could get to have some ethics reform? Some people have said a constitutional convention is the way to go. And I saw last week that leaders of both houses said they're incredibly against constitutional convention, which they have always been in charge of. So what do you make of all of that?
Well, let me say, first of all, I think many of the legislators that I speak to do want to see more reform and change. The fact that it doesn't happen is very frustrating, and it should continue to spark anger out there. I don't know that a constitutional convention is the way to get it, because, frankly, there's no guarantee that a constitutional convention will make it better. Chances are it'll be controlled by the same interests that create some of the problems today. And the influence of money in selecting delegates would be of concern to me as well. So, I've said I would vote against the convention, and I continue to feel that way. I think you should go through the process we have now to amend the Constitution. Look, there are a couple of pieces here. One is the issue of outside income, which certainly has to be dealt with. The governor's got proposals. Others have as well. Disclosure, where they've made some advances in recent years, but probably not enough. To me, the linchpin of all of this has to be getting to the issue of campaign finance reform. Too much money, private donations. You know, for my campaign, I think it's up to now $62,000-$63,000 per donor people can give. The LLC loophole, where these, you know, corporations are set up that so donors could give even more through these entities. All this needs to be changed and tightened up. And you need a system of public financing. Why? Is it perfect? Probably not. But if you have a system of public finance encouraging small donations that are matched with public money, you could have some competition. Alan, you know, and I say it lovingly about the legislature having served there, many of the seats, there's no competition because people feel, I don't have the money to run. And then the other issue, of course, and you've spoken to this, and I agree with you, the gerrymandering, the reapportionment. So, you know, you've had reapportionment that favors a certain party or a certain incumbent. You have the impediment of private fundraising for many people being an obstacle to running for office. All of this creates a less than competitive environment, so you don't have the kind of vibrant democracy, you know, that you should have at the state legislative level. To me, the solution is people got to pay more attention to who's running for the state legislature. We got to get more people to run and to not be afraid, you know, to challenge what it is that's not changing. But you know, limits on outside income, more disclosure, and public financing of elections, you know, those to me, campaign finance reform, those are the pillars, and people just need to press out. You know what part of the problem is, Alan? People understand this, but when they look at their own bread and butter needs, whether it's about jobs or health care, education, you know, those issues tend to get to the top of the list. And so most people don't vote on where, you know, their legislators stand on these ethics issues. And that's part of why the stalemate continues to happen. But it is discouraging. And I admire, you know, the good government groups that are still out there pressing. And I encourage them to continue to do so.
I know that you put out a report on schools and said that New York schools are more reliant on taxpayers than ever. What did that mean?
Well, basically, you know, despite the fact that there have been some, obviously, in more recent years, significant increases in state aid, when our report was looking at the regions outside of the city, you're seeing, outside of New York City, you're seeing an increased reliance on property taxes because of the expenses and the needs that school districts have. So, you know, that is the tax that people are most upset about when it goes up. It's a regressive tax. It's not tied to an ability to pay. So, you know, I think, you know, the message is we need to do more to protect that investment in public education and recognize that obviously quality and access to good education for our young people is the key imperative, but there are impacts as far as taxes when property taxes have to go up. You know, I've always felt we needed to figure out a way to rely less on the property tax for how we fund education. We've never come up with a perfect solution on how to do that, but I think our report points out that in spite of those healthy increases in state aid in recent years, still an awful lot of money that's raised through property taxes, and that creates other difficulties for localities and for taxpayers.
Our guest has been the wonderful Tom DiNapoli, New York State Comptroller. Tom, always love having you.
And congratulations on your fun drive going so well this year.
One day. And when the newspapers called me up and said, what was it all about? I said, Donald Trump. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Comptroller, thanks so much for joining us. Can't wait till the next discussion. Always appreciate your presence here.
Thanks.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.